Welcome, everybody. This is another edition of Conversations with Dr. Cowan and Friends. And as you know, I never know what edition we're on, but somewhere around 40 or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter. And today's friend is somebody that I've talked to once and was very interested in what she had to say. And her name is Tika Caldwell. And Tika, I always say to my guests, I'm going to do a slightly long-winded introduction. And if you hear anything that you disagree with, please feel free to correct me, because I would love to be corrected if I get off track. So essentially what we're talking about here, believe it or not, in the biggest sense, is the nature of reality. Now, there's many different ways to look at reality. And so let me just clarify, because I always try to be as clear in the terms and the definitions as I can. When I say reality, I mean like stuff, like this desk, and there's a garbage can here, and there's my glasses, and then there's my foot, and there's me, et cetera. So the question is, how does that stuff come about? Now, when you go to medical school, like I did, you learn that the only thing that exists in the world is stuff, physical reality. And it's made of atoms and molecules, et cetera. Now, the first thing I would say is, never mind that if you look at an atom, supposedly it's got a nucleus, and then somewhere in Chicago, it's got an electron. And between here and Chicago, there's nothing but space. And how that nothing but space becomes my foot or a table, nobody really knows. So they basically just ignore it. But the other thing that's interesting about it is that we have a theory in conventional science that somehow this stuff, which we don't even understand, because even sometimes it's a particle, which is just space, and sometimes it's a wave, which isn't even a particle at all. And so somehow that becomes stuff. So we don't understand the basics of it. And the other thing about it, we say this collection of non-stuff somehow knows how to, in the case of living things, to organize itself into a cat or an amoeba or a human being. Now, if you say, if you ask the question, how does it do that? They have no idea. There's literally no clue. And so I, a long time ago, I mean, 40 years ago, came to the conclusion that whole model was incorrect. So the question is, what is a better model? And let me just give you a picture of a model. So the world, the universe, you know, everything is bathed in this electromagnetic fields. Now, people have called this different things. They've called it the ether. They've called it the chi and prana and the etheric body and all different names. But let's just say it's invisible wavelengths. Now, in the way to picture that, or at least one of the ways that I pictured, is you have a lake and you drop pebbles into the lake and it makes wave forms. And if you dropped one pebble, you would have one waveform. But if you drop three pebbles, you would have intersecting waveforms, which then would create nodes, essentially. Now, my hypothesis, and I guess I would admit I can't prove it, is physical substance comes about in the intersection of those waveforms. Now, if it's a simple waveform, like two simple waveforms meeting, then you get essentially a precipitation, or you might say a crystallization of a simple element, like calcium or magnesium. And if you have literally thousands or maybe millions or maybe even billions or maybe even trillions of waveforms coming together, then you get a cat because you have all these different inputs. Now, interestingly, as some waveforms come together and make notes on a musical scale, like that's where the octave came from. And then all the way up to on the biggest level, you get the human being and these locations that people have identified for literally thousands of years. This would be a site where many of these waveforms are coming together, and that's where we're going to build Stonehenge, or that's where we're going to build the pyramid, because it's going to be an energy transducer center or something. It's going to make, it's, we're going to send out signals, or we're going to structure water, or we're going to make sound, or there's a lot of different theories. So the reason I bring this up is because if that's the model that we're looking at, then what you're doing starts to make sense, because you're starting to interact with those waveforms in ways that you probably understand and maybe even don't understand, right? This gets complicated, right?
Correct.
Oh, I just looked it up in a book. This is the whole history of humanity, is how do we interact with these waveforms? Now, the important point for me is, if you want to be in the game, you have to know that this is the game you're playing. Unfortunately, 99% of the medical profession and quote scientists don't even know they're playing this game. They're just looking for how does 10 atoms of sulfur ask itself the question, how does 10 atoms of sulfur make a human being that thinks? And they get nowhere, because that question is irrelevant. So that was a long-winded introduction. And I don't know if there's anything that you would like to correct in there, but basically then with that, if you could tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got into this. Let me just say, I when I heard about you and that you were working with it's like devices or things like this thing around my neck that actually intersects with these waveforms, I say to myself, I need to talk to this person and have them explain who they are and what they know about this, because frankly, I don't know everything I need to know about this. And so I want to know. And there you go.
Well, thank you so much. And the truth is, it is the mystery of the universe. And I just got through teaching a 3-day workshop, training people to do what it is that I do and how to use our tools. And the first thing I told them all was that I live in the skin of the student and I don't have all the answers. And the most intelligent geek in the class, who is part of our living design team and truly a genius, he said, Batika, it's your passion.
Yeah.
That drives you, you know? And so it's not only passion, but when we say passion, we generally think of what comes from the heart. And the intelligence of the heart combined with the intelligence of the brain, combined with the appreciation of nature, combined with the curiosity of how does vibration, energy, frequency, light, sound, and matter all relate, is a mystery that from a very young age, when I was swimming in a river in Covington, Louisiana, maybe 8 or 10 years old, and I could hear the sound of the motor coming from the boat much earlier underwater than I could above. And so I knew that sound was traveling through water differently than how it was traveling through air.
Yeah.
And it's these formative experiences that opened up my curiosity and was raised with a love for the beauty of nature. And then when I met my let me
stop you there for a minute, because I want to emphasize two points.
All right.
Something I say a lot, especially to parents, which is never try to teach a child something they're not interested in, because they're not interested. And there is no possible way of any human being learning something that, I think you use the word passion. I tend to like the word interest.
Yes.
You only can learn things you're interested in. You may be able to memorize something that you're not under duress, but that's not a human experience. The other thing that I heard is, we have a thing in science, which is we have these rules or these facts or these things that are supposedly true. And yet a human experience says that's just not so. So the scientist says sound travels better in air, but the human experience is that's not right. And we have defaulted to the scientists, and in almost every case, they're incorrect.
Well, thank you for highlighting that. And yeah, I was fortunate to grow up. My mother just had a passion for nature and the beauty of nature. And we would look at how the buttercups are formed. We would look at how the shells were formed, and spending a lot of time with the water. And then in my lifetime, I'm 62. I have watched the destruction of the areas that were beautiful and that were not polluted become polluted and less beautiful.
Yes.
Less shells, less trees, less vitality in the waters. And this is something from a very early age I was already picking up on that was very troubling for me.
Yeah.
And then when I went to Western State College in Gunnison, Colorado, I was in 1977 writing my own degree in environmental studies, trying to morph it from a degree in geology, because I was trying to discover some solutions. And I thought maybe I was going to go into political science or politics to go, you know, help wake people up to understand what we need to take care of. And it was Three Mile Island. By the time I was in my third year of college, I shifted to Alfred University, where they had one of the first degrees in environmental studies. And I was in tears all the time. And I would call home and my father would say, "Daughter, you can't go on like this," you know, because I was already worried about nuclear radiation destruction and a lot of things. But I was also at that time fascinated with what was the connection between color and sound. These things that to me were innately connected and color healing. I was in college, and then I was in the summer when I was in high school, I was an assistant at Montessori schools. I taught Montessori, and I thought, wow, Maria Montessori's talking my language. So the whole time I was going through school, I was seeing already things through an alternative lens from a traditional educational system, and then I became aware of stuff from Rudolf Steiner and on and on and on. But to fast forward, in 2000.
Let me stop you again. So it sounds like basically, and I think it's important, you came into life with an inherent interest in how nature works, in particularly to do with subtle energies. I don't even know if the word subtle is right.
Yeah, energies. It is.
Energies like sound, that's not so subtle. It's, boom, there's the sound.
And there's silent sound.
Yeah.
There's audible and inaudible sound, and there's visible and invisible light.
Right.
And at the frequency level, there's a certain note that correlates with a certain color, because it's only our sensory perception of the same vibrational wavelength.
Got it. So essentially, but the point right now is that you had a not only an interest, but a kind of sensitivity to perceive and maybe try to understand what was behind sound, light, and anything else that other people just seem not to be that interested in.
Yeah, and it was not necessarily easy being dialed in this way.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right,
so
keep us going here.
So when I was also trained in the art of becoming, the art of becoming your best self, and I was always looking for what is the common denominator in religions? What is the common denominator in nature, in science? I was never thinking divisively. I was always thinking holistically. Yeah. You know, like, how do we weave the golden threads? What, you know, there's something here that just doesn't quite make sense.
Right.
And why would humans want to be tearing down the trees and polluting the water and putting radiation everywhere that makes you sick? You know, right. So this pursuit continued for a lot of years. And also on a personal level, my youngest brother passed when he was 30. He died of either Crohn's or celiac or SPRU.
Yeah.
And my father died at 57 from heart attacks or arterial sclerosis or whatever. And you know, from very early on, I was also looking at what about vitamins and minerals, and where does some natural health common sense come in here? And actually, when I was a child, I grew up with horrible bumps on the back of my skin because my mother was always feeding us low fat stuff. So my dad would, you know, not be having this high fat stuff. And then lo and behold, now as an adult, when I started incorporating coconut oil in my diet and changed things, I have the smoothest skin that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so it's been this journey of learning the relationship from the inside to the outside, to the outside, to the inside.
Got it.
You know, and Living Design focuses, and that's the name of my company, Living Design Technology. And we focus on harmonizing internal and external environments, because what we think and feel affects our environment, and our environment affects how we think and feel. And I learned this from a very early age, growing up in a family that had a lot of growth, gave me a lot of growth opportunity, and then being concerned about the environment. And so as an adult, from 2000 to about 2015, I was trained in an art and science, well, the art of becoming. I was trained in multidimensional personal integration, a holistic way to work with the body, mind, and spirit. I was trained in neuro-linguistic programming. Yeah. I was trained in biogeometry. I was also trained in environmental studies. And for 15 years, I was walking a dual path of my own personal transformation, becoming aware of a holographic model to consider viewing the lens of the world holographically, which was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I was raised Catholic. I had a lot of guilt. And how, if I'm too full and the garbage can is here, me stuffing my stomach with food and not putting it in the garbage can is going to feed the children in Africa.
Yeah.
You know, however, from a holographic reality perspective, if imagining the children in Africa are being cared for, and if imagining and realizing that my prayers can actually affect matter and other people and places of things from far away, and imagining that changing me changes the world around me, and having the personal experience of forgiving different aspects of what seemed so wrong in my life and changing my perception of them, and then watching the people around me change. This was real life experience, not only in my imagination, but ultimately in my personal transformation. And so when I learned certain principles of the holographic nature of reality, and that thought affects matter, but it's not only thought, it's not that simple, it's feeling. And when I began to understand that the heart is not a pump, that the heart is an electromagnetic energy field generator, and that the center of our heart, there's a lot of secret things. There's a lot of wonderful things to learn about love. And it's where my traditional Catholic upbringing combined with the mystic, combined with wanting to understand the mysteries of the universe, there was a common thread somewhere. And that's what's called the center of the center, which is the transcendental gateway, which is some words that a teacher of mine, Dr. Kareem, shared.
Let's flesh that one out a little bit. So what was your relationship with all this with biogeometry? Because a lot of my listeners are familiar with biogeometry, and I've talked about it, and I've, you know, been very interested in it. I wrote about it in The Contagion Myth. There was a whole section on mitigating effects of 5G with biogeometry, which I think has been actually demonstrated to be the case. So how does that factor into this?
Well, so in 2000, I met my second husband. I was in business with my first husband for many years. We had a ceramics company. And it was clear that it was time for us to stay in business and end our marriage. And we did that. And then finally, we parted ways. But I met Richard Caldwell in 2000. And he was one of the first people who ever met Ibrahim in the United States in 1998 at the Biology Institute.
Ibrahim Karam, the founder of biogeometry.
Yes. And so when I met Richard in 2000, I had a clay studio, and it was a 7,200 square foot warehouse, and he would always come and go. And we got to talking about a lot of different things. And as one of my old friends said, we never ran out of things to talk about. But he was the first person to show me things to put on your cell phone and start talking about electro stress and electro pollution. But Richard is an architect. And Richard connected with Ibrahim in a very authentic way, because Ibrahim had once shared with Richard that he was the only architect he ever met that was intuitively doing biogeometry. And so, you know, Richard came back with all these videos and tapes. And the joke is, 21 years later, I still never watched them all with him yet. You know, but biogeometry was the center of the center of our relationship. Yeah. And I soon became interested, and I went to Ibrahim's classes, and I studied with Dr. Gilbert. And I can remember one of the first classes I was in, I couldn't hardly sit in my chair. I was like a kindergartner on steroids and wanted to stand up and say, Alleluia. Yeah. But what happened to me was that what started registering in my energy field was information that I have come to realize was very, very familiar to the innate wisdom within me. Yeah. And I immediately started thinking, not how do I do this for my phone or my home or for a business even, how do we apply this to the whole planet? Because this was weaving together vital principles that I was looking for my entire life. It gave me a vocabulary. It gave me an understanding of resonance, of subtle energy.
And this you're talking about is essentially the qualitative science of energies, particularly subtle energies.
Yes, the quality.
And he probably has as good a handle, if not better, than any other human being alive.
I agree. And my love and appreciation, both Richard and I with Ibrahim, is just endless. And, right. And you know, sometimes when I would be in class, though, I can remember one time Robert Gilbert was teaching, and we were teaching about the toroidal energy field and the energy from the sun coming to the earth from the center to the periphery. Well, that night or that morning, I woke up with a total kinesthetic visual experience of what was taught that coming day in class. And I told Richard, and I remember the sound of a lock, like going, dialing it in. And so what happened for me is as I was exposed to this information, it wasn't only mental. It was experiential. It was activating. Sometimes I would have clairsentient experiences that were unexplainable. And so for many, many years, we would go back and back and back, and I could never get enough. And every time I was there, I was always listening as if it was for the first time. And for that matter, always felt very humble and in the skin of a student, and was somewhat intimidated.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, life goes on and things happen, and I'm from New Orleans. Katrina happens. I'm from New Orleans. The BP happens. I was already worried about nuclear radiation, and lo and behold, Fukushima happens.
Yeah.
And these were activating experiences for me that literally brought me to my knees. I'd already been on my knees, and I finally realized, hindsight, like, how did I get here and what did I get myself into? And oh no, what is this really all about? And finally I realized, well, Tika, you asked for this. You know, because when the BP oil spill started happening, you know, I had learned how to use a lot of different tools and biogeometry tools, but I also used how to understand and read energy according to biogeometry principles, which is universal knowledge, which came from scientific microvibrational radiesthesia. And it was information that Ibrahim inherited from Chamaré and de Belizay, and then they inherited it before. So it's ancient information that has been handed down, and everybody's standing on everybody's shoulders. So when the BP oil spill,
we're talking about information that goes way, way back.
Yes, Pythagoras, ancient Egypt,
right?
You know, on and on.
Babylonia, all that. Yeah.
Right. And what I began to really understand in a more embodied way, because I had a teacher, Dr. Gene Basin. He says, first you have to know what to do. Then you have to know how to do it. Then you have to do it. Then you have to become it.
Got it.
And a lot of people used to say, you know, why do you repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat? Because who you are and your level of integration and your level of consciousness in any given moment is constantly transforming. And so when it's universal knowledge and universal truth and universal wisdom, it lands in different areas. And so in short, when after Katrina happened, I did a Harmonizing New Orleans project with a wonderful woman who is a philanthropist in New Orleans, because I had done a Harmonizing Asheville project as a research project, and I was on a team of people who were working with Dr. Gilbert. And we were using biogeometry principles, and we were using a variety of tools. And so I began to learn how to be creative in many ways. And I was also testing with subtle energy, testing the mic, you know, the cell phone towers. And I was the one getting the headaches and really getting, I learned the invisible can really affect you, whether you believe it or not, or whether you remember or not.
Right.
Major key, you know, consequently gray hair and glasses, you know, because Dr. Kareem warned us that when anything that you go into resonance with, you go into resonance with. So if you're testing for the incoherent or toxic energies, you're the canary in the mine.
Yeah.
Right. So when after Katrina, I did a Harmonizing New Orleans project and was gifted money by this philanthropist, and we ran it through a nonprofit I was working with, and a wonderful woman by the name of Shirley Sailors Clarkson, who was one of the founding members of the Holistic Nursing Association. Shirley was a mentor of mine for 15 years while I was being trained in biogeometry and while I was being trained in multidimensional personal transformation. Yeah. And so there were so many things that were weaving together. And the commitment of the Agape Center as a nonprofit was for largely helping children and people with cancer, but they were also into vibrational healing and resonance and alternative therapies. And I was able to secure funding and run it through the nonprofit to do this Harmonizing New Orleans project. And
so you're talking about harmonizing the, essentially the energy frequencies that were bathing New Orleans in, I would imagine, a kind of toxic resonance after Katrina.
Extremely.
And your job or your project was to make that into a more life-serving type of energy frequencies.
Exactly. Very legally, within legal distance from power lines, telling no one, although we did get tacit approval from somebody who was associated with law enforcement in the city so that we didn't get in trouble.
Yeah.
Or the philanthropist that I was working with didn't get in trouble. But basically what we did was by using certain principles about angle, location, and rotation, and how to dial in to the center of the center and where to place certain objects with certain vibrational resonance in close proximity to large power generators.
Right.
Okay. And it was just two women and a shovel doing glorified gardening.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't make a big deal of it. But coincidentally, the Saints won the Super Bowl a week later.
There you go.
Just, hey, coincidence, synchronicity, who knows? So the same woman who I was working with when the BP oil spill happened, she says, Tika, what are we going to do? And I was like, oh my God, are you kidding? What do you think I am? But I had been at a workshop with Dr. Kareem, and we had been doing some work, and I had also began to work with an electrical engineer who I probably will not mention names, but he was a senior electrical engineer for global projects for a major oil company. And yeah. He was also a trained MD. And I happened to manifest somebody who donated $100,000 to the Harmonizing the Gulf project. And we started multiplying like the loaves and the fishes. And I believe that it was the creativity and the innocence and the intuitive guidance. I know that how are we going to make a difference in such a large scale project that's not a scientific experiment? You'll never be able to prove what you did, but I was doing it for the love of it, not for the business of it.
Yeah.
Just to help make a difference. And we have to know what a person can do can be beneficial, sufficient, or optimal. But when you're talking about the Gulf of Mexico and you believe in prayers, and I've been asking for divine intervention for my whole life because I felt humans really needed some help. And I just didn't see with the logical thinking that was around me that was necessarily sufficient. I was just doing my part. Well, at the end of the BP oil spill came Fukushima. And that's where we had to multiply like the loaves and the fishes. And here we had my worst nightmare happening. We were out of money. I was able to connect with women, a group of women called the grandmothers all over the world. And that was the very beginning of what I call a humanitarian outreach. That was the trajectory that got me to where I am today in terms of applying certain principles that is universal knowledge and universal wisdom. And along the way, I inherited research from somebody who was working with clay, and he had very in-depth material about universal energy and sound frequency.
Yeah.
You know, in biogeometry, we pretty much talked about light.
Yeah.
Okay. But then I began to inherit this whole body of work about sound. Well, lo and behold, here I go, want to find and weave the two, which was my natural propensity with the sound and the light.
And then now with incorporate that into understanding with ceramics, which was also your sort of business and artistic background.
Yes. And I remember being contacted by somebody who had that body of work of the universal energy stuff. And it was December 21st, 2012. That was noteworthy.
Yeah.
And to me, I registered that as the Hail Mary pass. Like in football, that was the Hail Mary pass of the universe, landing a body of knowledge into my lap that put me on another 3 or 4 year trajectory. And I always do better when I'm invited, according to my life design chart. And once I realized that, my life became a lot easier. And I was invited to make pendants by people who were well-respected in the field. I was asked to apply what I had been working with the clay and for the Gulf and for the Harmonizing Rural Water Project for more personal use. And the first clay studio that I built, even with Richard being an architect, we laughed because it was way too small. It was completely not functional for what I needed, but I didn't get what was happening. I honestly didn't get it. There was nothing premeditated, but it was passion and purpose driven. And it was driven by a willingness to serve. And in 2010, I believe when we spoke earlier, you know, Richard, who was the one that introduced me to Ibrahim and was always ahead of his time. We're both Aquarians. Some people say, you know, that is a little bit of an influence, our astrology of why we are always considered a little weird. You know, he said, well, I'm going to the jungle. I've got to open my heart. And we went to Peru in 2010 while the BP oil spill was gushing. And there were other colleagues that had vibrational tools that I know were putting in the Gulf. We were not the only people doing prayers and good things. Never would I take credit only. But when we understand the law of resonance, and when we understand that everything in nature communicates through the law of resonance, amplifying harmony and amplifying the beneficial frequencies of nature and amplifying positive intention is the primary purpose and function of my life and my mission. But to learn how to do this in a very specific language that nature recognizes, that you can actually see the biological effects.
So the issue is to take these resonances, which you just described, the beneficial, harmonizing, life-serving, and it's not probably a bad word, but to sort of download those into a substance, and in your case, clay, to make them have a biological effect or allow them to have a biological effect. That's correct. Really the job. That's sort of the essence of the task here.
Correct. And you know, for the past 5 years, I've been working on and off with Dr. Gaetan Chevalier and Bob Hertz at SciTech Lab. And unbeknownst to me, over the past 5 years, they were measuring and testing the living design technology.
So that's what this is. This is an example of you taking the principles of sound and resonance and frequencies and light and design and form, downloading those into a device, in this case, clay, in order to have a beneficial harmonizing effect on a biological entity, meaning me.
Correct. However, it was really for Mother Earth.
Got it.
In the beginning, it wasn't for humans. Remember, I was thinking humans can't figure their way out of a paper bag. We might as well help the planet because she listens and she responds and you don't have to explain anything.
Right.
You know, having fish come back to a reef, having oyster beds that were closed down, you know, all of a sudden open again, having hemlock trees come back, having horses jump up and roll over and scratch their back on the ground and follow me out of a gate. You know, I had too many experiences with communication with nature to say thank you, that even if the people around me thought I was off my rocker, it didn't matter because I was getting enough positive feedback, just like I did when I was a kid.
Yeah.
With that motor under the water.
So the motivation was to essentially give back to the beings and the frequencies and the energies of nature that had actually allowed you to see these experiences and be moved by them to the point where you could hardly do anything but say, I want to learn how to say thank you to them.
Absolutely. And when I was in Peru, I had an experience early in the wee hours of the morning after being woken up from a dead sleep. And some people understand Sachumama, Yakumama, and Pachamama. It's another language. Every culture has different languages. Every culture has different lenses. But again, they're just our human words.
Right.
Right. But to have the consciousness of nature that Ibrahim always talked about, the netters, you know, the nature, the netters, the consciousness of nature. Well, many different disciplines have different names for these. You know, and another system that I've learned also will teach about the planes. There's a mental, emotional, spiritual, physical, astral, causal, and divine. Some of them call it Atmic. You know, the languages always change. And then I was also introduced to a body of knowledge called the Seven Flames. And it was getting me back to the color healing and the consciousness, the coherent consciousness, the multidimensional coherent consciousness that comes with the visible and invisible light spectrum as it relates to many of our energy bodies. And lo and behold, I found out that Mother Mary and Jesus weren't the only higher dimensional beings who have walked this earth, who are here to assist, as we learn from a narrow Catholic perspective. There are many other ascended masters who are also here to assist, just like the archangels have their tasks and their job. You know, there is a structure and an order. And ultimately, when we understand that the universe communicates in the language not only of sound, in the beginning was the word, and it was then it was let there be light. And then from the sound and the light came the form of frequency, which is the geometry of nature.
Yeah.
Okay. And people think that the water molecule is one geometry. It is not. It is not. And if you understand anything about Findhorn and the consciousness of water, several years ago, the consciousness of water came to someone at Findhorn and told them that the water molecule was getting destabilized because of all the different quantum noise or dissonance resonances that was changing the geometry of the water. That's what structured water is all about.
Yeah.
Because form has function.
Yes. All right. So essentially then in the beginning was the word. And so you're taking sound and then there was light. So you mix light and you create form, which has function, and you expose that to water, including the water in us.
Correct.
Or the water in any living being, or the water on the earth.
And or the sap in a tree.
Or the sap in a tree. Any entity that has water, which means any living entity or any earth or, you know. And you're trying, basically it's very simple. You're just trying to see how you can work with those principles. Sound, light, form, geometry to have a positive, cohering influence on the water.
In harmony with universal law.
Yes.
Not my will.
Right. So let's bring this down to, so if, let's just say if, even though this may not have been the main intention, but so if a person, you know, wears this or puts it, what have you seen? What can you expect? What's the experience that people tell you about?
Well, one of the fun experiences is if they do a kinesiology balance test, say with their cell phone, with and without the harmonizers on their phone. Not everybody, because remember, everybody's belief system, what you think and feel affects the environment, and the environment affects how you think and feel. So if people are of a particular frequency and a particular belief system, they have free will. Okay. Yeah. We are not here to control anybody. Number one, our technology or this technology, because it's according to universal law and universal principles, it's adaptogenic. It does not impose too much of this or not enough on that. It literally brings the energy quality found at the center of the center, the zero point. Dr. Gaetan Chevalier referred to this as a zero point technology.
Yeah.
And what that zero point is, you could probably explain it better than I when you spoke about the heart not being a pump, but an electromagnetic field that is creating a toroidal energy flow. So with that being said, when this, and another scientist that I worked with, and it'll explain it, what these tools have is a full and balanced spectrum. Well, no, let me back up. A stabilized, this is the key word, a stabilized, full and balanced spectrum of all magnetic frequencies common to living systems multidimensionally. We are not just giving information that is registered on the physical plane. Okay, so what happens when this silicon chip, which is basically what it is,
yeah,
loaded with a bunch of information, just like a crystal in a computer or silicon chip in a computer, it's loaded with algorithms and information and all kind of codes. We don't really know how our phones work. I don't. We just know how to work it. But through a multidimensional process, some of which.
So the clay is also essentially a silicone chip.
Correct.
Yeah.
With the codes for Mother Nature.
Got it.
It doesn't have my information. It's like a homeopathic bringing back all the frequencies multidimensionally of healthy living systems. That's it. And then it's your body, your soul, your spirit, your heart, your brain that chooses what it wants to do with it.
Got it. So then
it's not imposing. And so what happens a lot of times is that people hold their cell phone and we'll ask them to do a balance test, and I'll put my fist in their hand and just pull down to find their natural balance point. 8 out of 10 people, it's very easy to affect their balance, even with many, many good tools wearing on their body. Okay. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And then when the harmonizers are put on, either the pendant is worn or the stickers are put on the phone, 9 out of 10 people, 8 out of 10 people become like Iron Man. They become very, very grounded. I actually overdid it at a yoga class because I had on my earrings, which are loaded with the technology. I had on my Living Design t-shirt, which was loaded with the technology. I had something in the back of my pants for yoga. And my balance, you know, they asked me to do a handstand. And I looked like I was really good at this, you know, and I was, but not without that support, giving my signaling system the indication of where center is.
Right.
Center is here. And so what it is that I suspect happens is it affects the cellular communication of living systems because it cancels out a lot of the quantum noise. And gold is a noble element. Nothing can stick to it. And what I understood is that when we have a full and balanced spectrum of all magnetic frequencies common to living systems, it can be called gold energy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the sort of alchemist's quest for creating gold. They weren't necessarily physical gold, but the combination of all the energies native to and common to natural frequencies.
Correct. And then when you combine this with certain qualities of the mineral kingdom, and you combine this with certain geometries that have a specific form for a specific outcome. For example, shungite, okay, has a specific function. But it's not full spectrum.
Right.
So if you combine the Living Design stuff with the shungite, you're going to amplify the benefit of the shungite.
Right.
Okay, and so this is meant to be adaptogenic. It's meant to be cooperative. it works.
So you can use this with biogeometry pendants. You can use it with whatever else you're doing.
I do. I have my biogeometry pendant on.
Yeah.
You know, and I have my living design stuff, and I actually have a piece of shungite in my pocket.
You got it.
Only because I spend so much time on Zooming and the computer, and for a long time, you know, I was just, it's fun because we're not trying to be the only game in town. We're not trying to say by any means other things don't work. You know, the function of your clay, your not your clay powders, but your vegetable powders, you know, and what you're up to with that by improving the signaling system, because the frequency of your powders is not only the geometry and the function of the nutritional value, but it is the color vibration,
right,
the geometry and the form. You know, you're restructuring the water and the body. There's so much more to what you're doing. And I might add, and this I learned the hard way, I am certain that your powders are potent and they do what they do, not only because of the inherent vegetable powder, not only because you've applied biodynamic principles, but you have applied your passion, your love, and your energy combined, and your life purpose and your life mission is also there because you have been dedicated to be of service. And through the years, I have been told, and I was a little bit insecure to be called by the universe to bring more tools out and share this with other people, because I feel very respectful of all my teachers and very, very much want to be cooperative and play well with others, and am a team player for sure. But I think that the living design tools are meant for a different audience. You know, the average mom who may never find out about biogeometry, who has a baby chewing on a cell phone, who might never be able to understand maybe even the bandwidth of the conversation that we are having.
Yeah.
But that is why I was guided to design Keep It Simple Smart kits that you can easily attune a home with. Yeah. Stabilized tools, or you can attune a phone, and it's, I feel like it's sort of the Montessori method to multiply like the loaves and the fishes, to complement what Ibrahim is doing, to complement what you are doing, and many other colleagues that are doing wonderful things.
Great. That sounds like a great place to stop to me. And I learned a lot. It's been a wonderful conversation, Tika. And you know, we're about to partner with you in this, and I think it's a great match. It's exactly what we're both trying to do for God knows how many years. So welcome to the team, and we will be in touch.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you for joining me. All right.
Many blessings.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.